Okay, Dr. Brown again here, and here we go with the office recorded thing. As I said, I used to have a little more time for this unit, although I never really needed 5 complete hours, and it was always about 10 to 15 minutes more that would be useful. So I'm going to be talking about peripheral nerves, and obviously, I mean, the peripheral nerves are made up of axons and so forth that are part of the central nervous system, and there are connections all through this thing, but we do make a distinction. The peripheral nerves are bundled in such a way that they do need a nutritive artery to go along with each one. I mean, you have to maintain the health of those axons. So as we look at this, we're going to see that vascular disease can play an important role in this, and anything that's sort of inflammatory, obviously trauma is a big deal, because peripheral nerves are out often close to the skin surface, particularly as they go around joints like your elbow. I'm sure you've all hit your funny bone before and know it's not very funny. And what you're doing is you're traumatizing and temporarily having that ulnar nerve fire off when you hit that on your elbow. So there are a variety of things that involves peripheral nerves that are somewhat different than we see in the central nervous system. The peripheral nerves, of course, are made up of axons almost totally, either motor axons coming from the motor cell in the anterior or the anterior horn, or I guess lateral horn, anterior horn, more than lateral. I may have got that wrong. And, of course, from the dorsal root ganglia cells that are going to be sensory. And so you have some very long, when you think about it, extremely long axons. If you're going to innervate anything in your big toe, there are no connections in here. There are no synapses. So motor neurons and sensory neurons send out a single, extremely long axon that goes all the way down your leg. You think about basketball players. I mean, that could be like a 5-foot neuron, a 5-foot axon going all the way down there. So it's subject to trauma. You have to have a vascular supply to keep it healthy and so on. So we're going to be looking at nerves that have both sensory and motor elements within that. And we're going to start out with inflammatory conditions. We'll look at, I'm just going to list here as it's in the notes, and here it is, toxic things. We're going to be starting taking a look at inflammatory. You can even have tumors. The tumors, however, like in the central nervous system, don't arise from the nerve cells themselves. Almost always, the so-called peripheral nerve tumors, in fact, arise from Schwann cells that make them the equivalent of the myelin covering, the Schwann covering in, outside the central nervous system. It's got to be a little bit stronger. The central nervous system is contained inside a bony case. Not so for, of course, the peripheral nerves. So they've got to have a little more oomph, and Schwann cells are a little different in terms of, but those, that's the source of the tumors. Okay, Guillain-Barré syndrome is something that you might have heard about. This has been associated with viral infections and mycoplasma infections, and very rarely allergic reactions. We've had some issues in the past where we had people who got a flu vaccine and they were allergic to the egg that the flu virus was grown up in, duck eggs or chicken eggs, and turns out that they had a reaction to that that might have led to it. Now, what's going on? Well, it is autoimmune, but there has to be a trigger of some kind. So it doesn't just sort of start out of the blue. And again, the condition is quite similar to multiple sclerosis, except it's not involving the central nervous system. It's not involving the white matter of the brain or the spinal cord. It's involving the peripheral nerves. And in this case, the situation is quite similar in terms of activated T cells and other things, antibodies even, but primarily T cells, that lead to the attack on the myelin covering, the Schwann cell covering of the peripheral nerves. And sometimes it comes back afterwards, and sometimes not. People may have permanent paralysis. Typically, it's what we see as an ascending paralysis, and that is it involves the lower extremities first. But the reason for that is that the injury and destruction is something that happens piecemeal throughout the peripheral nervous system. And so the nerves are the longest ones are likely to have a bit more, simply because there are more places for the damage to occur. And so we tend to see it as an ascending paralysis. And paralysis as well as sensory, you can have pain associated with it, shooting pains and so forth associated with it. So it's a demyelinization process. The real problem comes in for the person when it comes to the point that it involves the phrenic nerve. The phrenic nerve, of course, is what innervates the diaphragm, and if you don't have diaphragmatic innervation, you're going to die. Now, we do have pacers. If you lose that permanently, suppose there's permanent damage to the phrenic nerve, we can, just like we can insert a pacemaker for your heart, you can insert a pacer that paces the diaphragm itself, and it's adjustable and keeps a person breathing. So if it's the only problem in terms of moving air has to do with diaphragmatic innervation, you can kind of deal with it. In the notes here, I have listed a few things in the printed notes. About 70% are preceded by flu syndromes. We know there might be antigen antibody. Definitely T-cell activation is the real issue here. There's some kind of a trigger, and again, not everybody fully recovers from this. We do see it. I've known people, in fact, who've had it and did not have a very much return. Before we go on to tumors, I want to say a few words here about diabetes, so I'm going to just go back to the previous one here. Diabetes is extremely important in terms of peripheral nerve metabolism, and the reason is that diabetes is really a vascular disease. I mean, it's, in the long run, it's going to gum up small blood vessels, and when it does that, it's going to gum up the little bitty artery that runs along inside the nerve that keeps the axons alive. And if that gets crudded up and you don't have good blood flow down it, the nerve axons are going to die. Another problem is that with diabetes, with high levels of blood sugar, one of the metabolites, side branch metabolites, will be the production of sorbitol. And if that accumulates inside of the nerve itself, inside the nerve sheath, it'll pull water in and cause the nerve to swell. Well, nerves always don't have a good place they can swell. If they go around, a joint like your elbow or your knee, they tend to go through a connective tissue tunnel. And if they're trapped in there, when they swell, they'll just squeeze the crap out of the nerve, which will also mean that it's going to compress the nutrient artery that's going inside the nerve. So diabetes is a two-edged sword. One, it causes long-term vascular damage that screws up nerve itself, plus it has the sorbitol. The peripheral neuropathy of diabetes is one of the worst things people have to put up with in terms of shooting pains and things like that. Tumors of the nerves, again, do not come from the neurons themselves. They come from the Schwann cells. And in that regard, it's kind of like the tumors within the brain. Here we're taking a look at a nerve tumor, and you say, well, wait a minute, I thought you said peripheral nerve, and here you're showing us a brain. Well, indeed, you do have some Schwann cells and peripheral nerves within the cranial vault. At least they behave as cranial, peripheral nerves. And those would be the fifth cranial nerve and the eighth cranial nerve. Those do have long courses. And, of course, the others, like the extraocular muscle innervation from cranial nerve 3, 4, and 6, those have Schwann cells on them, and you can have tumors arising there from the Schwann cells. So those have technically exited the brain, and so they have a Schwann cell covering. And this is what we're looking at here is an intracranial, but outside of the brain substance itself. You'll see where the thing has been removed, and you'll see all it's done is depressed or compressed the brain tissue. This one arose from the eighth nerve, and that's an uncommon sight. Also, you can see the picture here that they look like they kind of look like Schwann cells. They're trying to wrap themselves around something. These are almost always benign, and they occur here, but they also occur plenty of times out on the peripheral nerve. So you could have them on the arms and legs and places like that. We kind of collectively refer to these as schwannomas or nerve sheath tumors because they occur from the cells that line, or not line, but cover the nerve itself. Now, there is an inherited condition called neurofibromatosis, and neurofibromas are a little bit different. Although there are people who have this that might have schwannomas, they also have a kind of a hybrid tumor, and it is benign as a rule. Neurofibromas, it's a combination of a Schwann cell and a fibroblast. And these occur in great numbers all over the body. There are two versions of this. There is a type 1, which, again, we know where the genes are for this. We might see rarely optic gliomas with it, but they also have interesting pigmentation of the skin. Now, the picture of the person over here, you can see he has some lumps on the left side of his face, and he's got an eye that's kind of closed up because there's a growth in there, and these are tumors that grow all over the place. They'll compress things. That's the main problem that they do. And occasionally, rarely, they do become malignant. One might, because each person who has this genetic condition might have a blue million of these tumors. And if there's a 1 in 1,000 chance or 1 in 1,000,000 chance that one of them is going to become malignant, well, they've already got 1 million of them, so one of them is going to probably do it. So there are interesting things that occur with this neurofibromatosis. You might have heard of the story of the elephant boy, an English kid who had a deformity such that he would not go out. What he had was neurofibromatosis. This is the most common one, type 1, and here we see something in the eyes called Lish nodules. You can see these dark brown nodules in the iris. Those are part of it, and this cafe au lait spot, coffee with milk kind of thing, shows this area pigmentation right here, and it can be in a variety of places on the skin. These occur internally as well. They can occur within the abdominal cavity, and the real problem comes in if they compress the vital structure, like if they occur next to a blood vessel and squeeze the blood vessel, they may cause inadequate blood flow simply because externally it's being squashed. That's the most common, the type 1 that we see. And the type 2, much less common, is the one that we can see. We might have meningiomas associated with it, and also having the cranial nerve 8, schwannomas might occur with that one. Most schwannomas, most tumors that we looked at in the very beginning of this thing, occur sporadically. This guy right here, this occurs sporadically, that it is not part of any congenital syndrome. It's perfectly benign. The problem is it's a terrible surgical approach. It's at the bottom of the brain. How do you get there? You can't take the brain out, remove it, and put the brain back. It's an awful surgical approach to come up under through the mastoid part of the skull and get in there and try and remove that. Sometimes there are serious complications and injury secondary to the actual removal of the thing. We're doing better now with stereotactic techniques and what might be called robotic surgery with these, and it's making this considerably easier. But nonetheless, it's in a really area where lots of vital structures are, and they have to be very careful. So the type 2 neurofibromatosis is the one that has this association, also multiple meningiomas. That's basically the story. So there you go. Good luck. And I will try to get you actually some questions to think about with regard to the questions I'm going to submit for the test, which comes up in about a week and a half, I understand. Okay. Hope that's it. Thanks. Bye.